This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks with Michelle Owen, Alex Crook and Sam Matterface.
Hello and welcome to a special season finale of the All Football Commentators Are Geeks podcast, recorded hours after Manchester City emerged victorious in arguably the best title race we have ever seen.
Possibly. I'm Sam Matterface from TalkSport and ITV, fresh from covering the final day drama at the Amex. I'm currently sitting in a bar in Brighton with Manchester City fans supping beer around me.
And I'm Alex Crook from TalkSport. It was a very busy afternoon for me as well, but for very different reasons to Sam.
And I'm Michelle Owen from Sky Sports.
Coming up this week, Sam takes us behind the scenes of City's coronation, and we'll look at the dynamics involved in covering the final day permutations.
There'll also be a very special week in numbers, looking back on the best stats from a wonderful season, and we'll also be picking out some of our most memorable moments.
And find out why I will never be allowed to book a hotel for the AFC Geeks end of season wrap party.
That's all on the podcast that thinks a 12-hour round trip to Sunderland is the only way to spend a Saturday evening. All football commentators are geeks.
It's all over, I think. No.
Subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all major podcast platforms. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.
We should point out at this juncture, we scripted that intro before the final games had even kicked off. We did hedge our bets slightly on City not ballsing it up at Brighton, as TalkSport did by sending Sam to the Amex. How peeved would you have been if Liverpool had snatched the title and you were 250 miles away?
Do you know what? And it's a really selfish thing, isn't it? You know, I've got no real interest in terms of no like particular personal interest in either of them. But I didn't want anybody else to get the moment today. And I was downstairs in the press room at half-time with John Cross from The Mirror, Neil Ashton from The Sun, and we were discussing it and saying, you know, and Rob Harris, actually, from the Associated Press, and we were saying, look, you know, we've got no horse in this race, but what we do have is our own personal pride, and we want to be involved in the moment that someone lifts the Premier League title. That means we need to be here. Yeah, it was a bit of a gamble, wasn't it? But it wasn't that much of a gamble. If you looked at the odds earlier this morning, I think Manchester City were something like 50-1 on to win the title. Liverpool was 7.5-1 at kickoff or to lift the trophy. So it always seemed that Manchester City were going to do it. But in this week of all weeks, anything could have happened. And when Glenn Murray scored and they were already 1-0 up, Liverpool, in that game, I did start to think, oh no, I haven't picked the wrong game to go to, have I? So I was delighted in a sense that Sergio Aguero managed to calm the nerves very quickly. I think the Manchester City fans that are quietly sitting here drinking vodka and Red Bull, there's a guy at the bar who's drinking a vodka Red Bull, there's a couple of guys chomping on some big steak burgers and some big tankers of beer at the moment to celebrate what was a really good day for them.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like a title party. Yeah, you can hear a bit of music in the background, a bit of mingling, but I'd imagine it would be a very different scene in Liverpool in the pubs there if they managed to win the title. I suppose that's the price of success, isn't it?
There's only about seven of them in here, so it's not fair to label this a party. I just happen to have seen a couple of them in here, and I thought the noise would be about right. And they're also being very polite to me and not gate crashing the pod, which I didn't think would be particularly good. But yeah, look, I think they've done brilliantly. And I spoke to Pep Guardiola after the game, and he was exhausted, I think. His players were exhausted. He's going to give them 2 days off, actually, now. So they're going to give them Monday and Tuesday off ahead of the cup final on Saturday. But he was very emotional, actually. And I think it's worth sort of listening to what he's had to say. And I don't think anyone will mind. I don't think anyone at TalkSport's going to mind if I play you the first few seconds of his answer that I got from him in the tunnel. So this is me speaking to Pep Guardiola just moments after they've come off the pitch, and just listen to the emotion in his voice and the tribute that he plays Liverpool. Well, I'm standing here next to Pep Guardiola, who is wearing his Premier League winners' medal for the second season in the row. The first team to do that in a decade, 198 points over 2 seasons, and a relentless, magnificent run of form at the end of the season, which has seen you win 14 consecutive games. Did you have to do that because the opposition was so good as well?
Yeah, definitely. So I have to thank you, Liverpool, to push us. So without this contender, we knew it from the last 2-3 months. We could not win the title, retain the title, if we don't win a lot of games. And they pushed us to win 14 in a row. So both sides was incredible, but we were a little bit better than them.
I think that's great of Pep, to be honest. He does know how to play the PR game at times. But he's right. Listen, as much as it pains me to say it, because it's been another disastrous afternoon for my club, and we won't talk about that because they don't warrant a mention when we're talking about teams competing for titles. It's been a fantastic race, and Liverpool lasted the course. They did all they could today. I always thought both teams would win today, and the fact Liverpool have ended up on 97 points and not won the league just shows how high the standard is. And I was talking to a colleague of mine driving back from my game at Southampton. Basically, there's two very good teams in this league. Tottenham, who arguably have overachieved, maybe you'll bring up expected goals later and prove me right or wrong on that. The rest of them are very ordinary. United, Chelsea, Arsenal. But for those two teams at the top to manage to do it week in, week out, I think I heard you in commentary say it was 70-odd days since either of them dropped a point in the title race.
Unreal.
That is an incredible standard. And do you know what I enjoyed today? Because I was at Southampton for TalkSport. I was bottom of the running order. I was told that when I got there. I guessed it already because it was the worst game on the card. And I was able to listen to you and to Adrian and Ian Danter at Anfield just relay the drama unfold. I didn't get on until 40 minutes into my match after Nathan Redman scored a belter. I was only on four times all afternoon. So I felt like a fan today, and I was lapping up the drama. I thought it was great the way that TalkSport did it, throwing between you and Stuart and Ian and Ray at Liverpool, and it really just encapsulated that final day. And it was great to be a part of. You must have loved it being at Manchester City. I think Adrian obviously was hoping he'd get the big story at Liverpool, but I don't think he expected it. But it's been a wonderful season, and I think we're going to see now a period of domination between those two clubs.
I think it was absolutely fascinating the way we covered it today. And that's one thing that radio can do that TV can't really do. My daughter actually sent me a picture of the way that she was watching the title race unfold, which was she had Sky and she had a double window. So she had the Manchester City game in sort of like a three-quarter screen and then the Liverpool game in the top corner. And
I've done that before, but it's not the same. You're right, it's not the same.
It's great, but you can't really follow it the same way. But on radio, when you've got that sort of nimbleness that takes you from one place to another in the blink of an eye, I think that's absolutely great. I thought what you said about the league in general is really interesting as well. Chelsea finished third in the league. I think that tells you everything. I mean, I don't even know. Do you know what? This is ridiculous. I don't even know what the score was today. Did they win? Did they draw? I don't know. I know that Tottenham drew with Everton 2-2. But ultimately, my focus was primarily, totally, in fact, not even primarily, totally and utterly on this game here. So I don't even think I could tell you, apart from that Tottenham-Everton result, another result in the league today. Because
why is that Tottenham-Everton result so prevalent for you?
Because it changed really quickly and it happened in my ear. No. And I thought if Tottenham don't win, then Chelsea will end up in the top three, which is, again, remarkable, as I've already mentioned. But, you know, what a fantastic title race it was. You said it was the best title race of all time. Now, I always think the final day story at Anfield in 1989, when Michael Thomas scores that goal and Brian Moore says it's up for grabs now, is the best sort of example of how a title race should finish, really. But this one has ebbed and flowed. 32 times the lead has changed between the two over the course of the season. That is absolutely unbelievable. Now, people will say, oh, it's distorted because they play on different days and one doesn't play till the other one's finished and the TV coverage means that it's all spread out. But in order for that to happen, they need to be really close in the table. The points difference needs to be very, very tight. And that just shows you how these two have pushed each other on, as Pep said in the interview there. You know, thank you to Liverpool for keeping them honest, I suppose, in a way. And I think Liverpool do deserve a lot of credit.
I agree that they've pushed each other to new levels, and I suppose that's what I mean, you know, because you're going back to the 1980s, it was a different era. I don't think those two teams arguably were as good as these two. I mean, you always think that your era is the best, but certainly in the Premier League era, I think this was the best title race we had. And I know it's gone to the last day before. I remember United being 1-0 down at home to Spurs in 1999 and Andy Cole scoring that wonderful lob over Ian Walker, the Spurs goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened too often. I mean, you had the Aguero moment. which... I was going to ask you that question, actually.
Yeah.
So that was dramatic. And we're never going to see a more dramatic finish to a season than that, I wouldn't imagine. How did covering today compare to covering that match? Because that was completely unexpected. Nobody gave Queen's Park Rangers a prayer, much like Brighton this afternoon. But obviously, QPR did run them close. And there was a stage where Manchester United, going into the 91st minute, thought they were champions. It was never that close today.
It was never that close today towards the end of the game, but it was worse than that earlier in the game. Manchester City had to score twice. You know, they were in a situation where they had to score two goals. Now, for any other team at any other juncture, that would be difficult. So that there was that little bit of jeopardy, but it didn't last very long because Sergio Aguero scored within a couple of minutes. Pep says he knew it was going to be okay. But, you know, a lot of City people, and I spoke to someone who worked in very high up in Manchester City, who's been a Manchester City supporter for a very long time. And that person all morning was texting me saying that they were really nervous and they couldn't sleep and, you know, they weren't making any plans for later because ultimately they didn't know what was going to happen. This is how City do it. City always take it to the wire and they always let you down. They're a nightmare and they've done it before. They always make us sweat. And I thought, when that goal went in from Glenn Murray, I thought, here we go again. But it didn't quite work out like that in the end. I really loved today. I absolutely loved today. I thought it was a brilliant day. And I thought Brighton hosted the event really well. They did this brilliant thing where they did their lap of honour. Manchester City stood out the way and allowed Brighton to do their end-of-season lap of honour and conduct all of their business on the pitch that they wanted to do. They wanted to say goodbye to Bruno, who's the oldest outfield player in the Premier League this season, 38 years of age. He's leaving the club. And then they handed the microphone over to Andy from Manchester City, the PA guy, who does a lot of stuff in Blue City Square, the Blue City Square, who does a lot of podcasts and some social media stuff for them as well. And they allowed him to have the mic to do the tannoy, and all the Brighton supporters stayed and watched as Manchester City celebrated and received their Premier League title. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I think the Brighton fans were probably pleased to be a part of such a historic occasion. First team to win back-to-back Premier League titles in a decade. The only thing I don't like now is the actual presentation ceremony itself. I think it goes on for far too long.
Were you listening to us?
I wasn't. I was because I was obviously at Southampton Huddersfield. I was actually writing my copy in the press room and I was watching it on Sky.
I've
and there was even a City fan in there moaning, saying, "Oh, come on, I just want to see the trophy now." I think it's too choreographed.
Choreographed? It went on for an absolute age. And listen, I was well prepared. I was quite happy to talk through the whole thing. It was not a problem for me, as you can imagine, because I do quite like talking quite a bit. It was absolutely fine. But they threw to me at just after 5 o'clock. I don't think they lifted the trophy till 25 past five. They bought out every single member of the backroom staff. There are 26 medical staff, 5 and sports scientists. There are another 7 backroom staff that assist Pep Guardiola. And then there's Pep himself. So all those people came out first. Then they brought out the entire squad. They then introduced each and every one of those squad members in front of the City fans, then gave them a medal. And it just went on and on and on and on and on. It was like the EFL awards that went on to about 3 in the morning. You never knew when it was going to stop. But anyway, in the end,
it must have been hard for you to keep that going. You know, there's only so many notes you can roll out if you're doing.
I've got to be honest with you. It wasn't, because what I did was, is every time they introduced a player, I then started talking about each and every player, which was good because I hadn't been able to use any notes over the course of the day because things had happened at such a fast pace and there was so much happening around the country. I hadn't used any of those notes, so I had that in my locker to sort of refer to and bounce it. I was, you know, I love preparing. I love studying. I was more than happy to do it, and I absolutely enjoyed it. I absolutely loved it today. I thought it was a great day to be involved in broadcasting. It really was.
Quick word on Manchester City, actually, because I was at the Football Writers Awards on Thursday night. It's the first time I've ever been. I'm very grateful for Carrie Brown, the new chair, for inviting me, and Raheem Sterling was presented with their Football of the Year award, and he was brilliant. He came down from Manchester, despite the fact he had this huge game. The Manchester City press officer, Simon Heggie, I knew at Reading, actually. He's come a long way, further than Reading. He came down with him. He gave a fantastic speech on the stage. And they're a classy club, Manchester City, as much as it pains me to say that. And that was a great event as well. Although, as we know, I did book a dodgy hotel room.
What happened with that? Because you sent me a picture on Thursday in which you were very excited about going to the award ceremony, the Football Writers Award ceremony, because you've never been before, as you mentioned. And then you sent me basically a picture of a prison cell.
Well, I was in two minds because I'd never been before. I didn't really know what to expect. I guess being a group of a couple of hundred journalists, it would be a fairly boozy affair. And I didn't really want to get a train back to Portsmouth after spending the night sinking bottles of red wine. So I just thought, right, just get yourself a hotel near the venue. It was in Mayfair. I wasn't going to stay there. It was £350 a night. So I got one round the corner. I didn't pay £10 a night or anything like that, but I turned up and it was the smallest bed I've ever seen. It was like I was
but
in Coventry.
But you've got
it was,
previous
it was
for booking terrible hotels. You are useless at doing this. You shouldn't even be allowed an Expedia or a Booking.com account. You always go for the cheap option and you always mess it up.
Yeah, I won't be doing it again. Listen, the only good thing was I was drinking until 4 o'clock in the morning with quite a few of the people who've come on the podcast over the course of the season. So I literally was only in the room for 4 hours. So if there's a saving grace, it was that. And it was a great night. And again, Gareth Southgate was there representing England. I think he stayed at the hotel, but he was up until the early hours. He was
the actual hotel, not your
hotel. Everybody. He was at the actual hotel. Yeah, he could afford it. But he was making time for everybody. It was a brilliant event. And listen, journalists are the best company in the world, and it was a fantastic evening, and I can't wait for next year.
I know of at least one chief football correspondent of a national newspaper who admitted to me that he didn't go to bed until 4:30 a.m.
I was four, and if that was John Cross, then I think we were two of the last standing.
Yeah, I think you were. Okay, let's look back at the season in numbers.
The Geek Sheet, this week in numbers.
Emerick Laporte scored a header for Manchester City. It was their second and season-clinching goal via a Riyad Mahrez corner. Now, this is despite only scoring 5 goals for 292 previous corners. It is the worst conversion record from corners in the Premier League.
Liverpool set a new club record for goals at Anfield, and their total of 97 points would have won them the title in 25 of the 27 Premier League seasons.
Manchester City finished the season with a 14-game winning run. It's the second longest winning run in their history.
Pep Guardiola has become the first manager to retain the title in Spain, Germany and England.
And Manchester City have now scored 163 goals in all competitions this season, the most by any team in Europe's major leagues this campaign, and a new all-time top division record.
Well, it certainly has been a brilliant season to be a football reporter. Between us, Sam and I have worked out we've covered well in excess of 200 matches, and Michelle can add significantly to that tally. In the next part of the pod, we will be looking back on our favourite moments of the season, and Sam will be taking us behind the scenes at Chelsea's end of season awards.
What a headshot!
It's time for Tales from the Tunnel.
Not so much Tales from the Tunnel, but Tales from behind the scenes at Chelsea's end of season do. It was actually a fabulous event. It's the second time that I've done it. I did it with Ailey Barber, who was brilliant company and a very, very consummate professional, excellent as you would expect. And we had a really good evening, actually. But the show itself was really short because Maurizio Sarri was determined, because it was on the Friday before the end of the season, so there's still 2 days before, well, there's 1 day before the game against Leicester today, that Chelsea had to be out of the building. The first team squad had to be out of the building by 9:30. The women's squad had to be out even earlier than that because they had a game the next day that kicked off at 12:30. So we had to do the awards. They started at around about, the plan was for them to start around about 8:15 and finish about 9:30. In the end, we started a bit of preamble at 7 o'clock, got back on the stage at about 8:35, and we finished at 9:32. So Maurizio Sarri was really pleased because we did it all to time, which was good. It did mean that it was significantly truncated, but we got some cracking access and cracking lines. And I was speaking to Eden Hazard on the stage, and he had this, he's got a brilliant sense of humour. I know you've met him a couple of times. He's a charismatic guy who knows how to work a room, and he stood up in front of all these people, and I said to him, look, let's talk about your goal tally, let's talk about the goals that you scored. last night, when we were watching the penalty shootout, there was a lot of nervousness amongst Chelsea fans in particular, because it wasn't really going Chelsea's way. The game hadn't gone Chelsea's way. The shootout had started badly. Cesare Filicueta had missed the penalty. He made a joke on stage about that, by the way, which was quite funny. And I said, but when you stepped up to take that decisive fifth penalty, not one person in the ground thought you were going to miss. Did you think you could possibly miss? And he pushed his chest out. He looked at me, one eyebrow cocked into the air, and he went, no. No. And I just thought, he has got that sort of cocky charm that a lot of players have got, but he's sort of almost a bit of a throwback, because he's not as much of a well-oiled publicity machine as some of the people that want to be up there winning the Ballon d'Or. But he's obviously just as gifted. I do think that he has got the opportunity to go on and be an unbelievable player if he really knuckles down and really concentrates and really works hard. I don't know if he's ever going to do that, because he's just such a joker. He's so relaxed. He's so laid back. I don't know whether that will work for him. But then later on, he starts talking about someone started heckling, screaming out, sign the contract, sign the contract. And he just went, grabbed the mic off me and went, give me the pen. So I went scrambling. I went, Bruce, quick, give it to me. And we had a bit of a laugh about that as well. But he's full of personality. He's happy to laugh. He's happy to tease the fans and keep them stringing along as well, because I don't think he is going to stay.
No, I don't either. And I think he's going to be a massive loss to the Premier League, not just because of his football ability, but for those character traits that you've mentioned. Yep. I mean, that was almost Cantona-esque, the way you're talking about him puffing his chest out and saying, no, there was no way I was going to miss.
Yeah, the Chelsea it's are missing more, though. Well, they won't be finishing third if he's not in the team next season, that's for sure.
No, I mean, I messaged you privately earlier in the season and said, without Hazard, you're pretty much West Ham. And I'll probably stand by that.
Over the top.
Yeah, I think, well, let's see what happens next year.
I'm not Brian Gunn. You don't have to try and poke fun at me.
Now, listen, I'm glad you mentioned Brian Gunn, because he came up on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. This is incredible.
You've got to stop winding him up. You're supposed to be a professional journalist. You keep picking on his son and trying to draw his ire. You're supposed to be a little bit bigger than that. Well, you are much bigger than that.
So is he, by the way. I saw Brian Gunn tonight. I was apologetic a couple of weeks ago, because maybe I was clumsy in my terminology for the goal that I criticised Angus for, he conceded against Bournemouth, though I still stand by, I think it was a mistake, and I've spoken to ex-players who agree with me. Today, there is no debate. Ryan Bertrand passes the ball back to Brian Gunn, he miscontrols it.
Angus Gunn, not Brian Gunn. Brian Gunn wasn't there.
Sorry, I've got Brian Gunn on the mind. Ryan Bertrand plays the ball back to Angus Gunn, he miscontrols it, he was far too casual, and Pritchard takes it off his toe and rolls it into an empty net. I described it on Twitter, as I did on the air, as catastrophic. It was a calamity.
Oh, again, Brian, it's a strong language, isn't it?
Well, according to Brian, it is, because he comes back to me and sends me...
According to Clive Tilsley, who you interviewed not so long ago, that's not the kind of wording that you should really use. You should be a bit more careful with your language.
I did think about that. I think it was catastrophic for Southampton, because it cost them the game, and it cost them £2 million. They would have finished one place higher in the Premier League. I think if you speak to Ralph Hasenhüttl when he comes to discuss his summer transfer budget, he will say that's a pretty big blunder from Angus Gunn. Brian didn't agree. He quoted me the dictionary definition, which is of a volcanic eruption. Clearly, it wasn't a volcanic eruption. But I am starting to think now, if you're Angus Gunn, you've been in the England squad, do you want your dad defending you on social media when you know you've messed up? Because I spoke to Ralph Hasenhüttl after the game, and he said, look, he's coming. He's apologising in the dressing room. If it was me and it was my dad, I'd say, can you just leave it out, Dad? I can fight my own battles.
I just love the fact that you got so stressed about it that you were sending us screenshots of what he'd said back to you, and you were like really getting angry about the fact that he'd come back at you, and none of us would... We've got a group of journalists that sort of all talk about these issues when they pop up, and no one was supporting you, just to see your reaction. And you do, because you are a bit sensitive.
Stand by my wording today. Whatever way you look at it, whatever word I've used, it was one of the big goalkeeping blunders this season. And as I say, it's cost them £2 million. It's cost them the game.
I think the biggest problem is that you are almost as touchy as Brian Gunn. And as a result of that, there's never going to be a winner here. Listen, let's have a look back at some of our favourite moments of the season. What's been your best moment to commentate on?
Yeah, do you know what? When I messaged you this morning and said this is my 112th game today, and we were sort of comparing notes. I think you're going to be on 109 by the time the playoff finals have finished. And then I thought, wow, there's a lot of those games that I can't remember. Mm. They just roll into one. But there are some moments, and not necessarily what happened on the pitch, because we are journalists and we always try and remember games, or we do remember games, by what happened afterwards. And probably the standout moment of the season for me involved the Chelsea manager, Maurizio Sarri, when they were hammered at Bournemouth. One of their worst performances of the season. I think we all thought he was going to get the boot after that. And if you remember, he locked the players in the dressing room at the Vitality Stadium, and I was texting the producer at TalkSport and saying he's not let them out yet. And then he booted the coaching staff out. Suddenly Gianfranco Zola was listening at the door, and that for me was one of the stories of the season, just because it involves Sarri and Chelsea and Eden Hazard. Equally, when Tottenham capitulated at St Mary's and we played the interview on the pub, we got that great line from Pochettino saying, basically, I've taken this Spurs team as far as I can. Well, you haven't, because you're now in a Champions League final. So they were two big standout moments, more for the interviews with the managers than for what happened on the pitch, although James Ward-Prowse's free kick that won the game against Spurs was a thing of beauty. And, of course, the Mark Hughes sacking story, which with your help I was able to break on TalkSport, that was a pretty big story to land as well. So for me, the season is memorable for the stories I've been involved in more than the games on the pitch. Probably for you, you have some big commentary moments to share with us.
Well, you said you did 100 and what? How many games?
112, roughly.
112. But a lot of those aren't commentary, are they? I mean, how many commentaries do you think you did?
Probably still a fair few, because obviously I commentate for TalkSport Live, which is the international service, every Sunday. So I'd say 40%.
Yeah, I reckon I've done I'm just going through the list now in front of me, and I'm looking back at some of the games. I've done 93 commentaries this season, right? And I'm just looking at some of the games that I've done. Some really, really, really good games. Going back to earlier in the season, Manchester United derby in the Carabao Cup, when Harry Wilson scores that terrific, terrific goal, and Derby beat Manchester United on penalties. It's brilliant. The Liverpool-Chelsea Carabao Cup the next night, when Eden Hazard scores that fabulous goal, which is my favourite goal of the season. Going further down the list, Chelsea beating Manchester City, the Arsenal-Liverpool game, which was a contest. I thought that some of the other matches, I'm just trying to go through them now. The 46th match I did of the season was Cardiff against Manchester United. Now, usually Cardiff against Manchester United wouldn't get me as excited as this one did, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was his first game in charge, and I did the interview with him afterwards. I thought that was a great moment. I also did Wolves-Liverpool in the Cup, which I thought was a great game. I thought Liverpool did really well in that. I've been really lucky, actually. I think sometimes, like you, it all sort of merges into one. And until you look back and work out the games that you've done, and I do keep a list of it. I keep all my research in order for the course of the season. So I make a book and I keep all my research in order, so I can flick through and look back at the ones that I've done. But yeah, it's been a real privilege to do so many of these really good games. One of my favourite moments was getting the chance to commentate on Portsmouth again. And I did the EFL Checkatrade Trophy final for the World Feed. And Portsmouth winning obviously meant a lot to me, to everyone I know. But it was a great game of football as well. It was really, really entertaining. And I think, you know, we often talk about these big European nights. Of course, they were big European nights in the last week or so. But those games, 80,000 plus at Wembley, watching Portsmouth and Sunderland, it goes to a penalty shootout. Brilliant, fantastic game.
Well, I think you got the better end of the deal there, because I was at Sunderland-Portsmouth, the rematch on Saturday night. Only 26,000 turned up at the Stadium of Light. They had 41,000 when they played there at the end of April. It was a terrible game between two really average teams, either of whom will lose to Charlton in that League One playoff final. I have no doubt about that. It was a long old trek. You know me, I don't like straying too far north. But I did the game. And the longest part of the trip.
Did you get someone to drive you, though?
I did get someone to drive me,
You're so posh, aren't you? You're secretly quite posh. To have a chauffeur, that's quite impressive.
I'm just a really bad driver. And the prospect of driving 12 hours and into the night wasn't a good idea for me or anybody else using England's motorways on Saturday evening. But the longest part of the journey was the 150 steps, and I counted them from the press room to the press box. And I've been warned about this.
Yeah. You're not crying.
That is a long way, and you're a long way up from the pitch as well. I mean, it was my first experience at the stadium. It's a great stadium. I would have liked it to have been full. There's a lot of apathy about Sunderland, and a little bit about Portsmouth as well. It has to be said, their fans weren't impressed with the performance or the way they've fallen away since the turn of the year. So if you're a betting persuasion, get your money on Charlton. I thought they were impressive today, and they will beat either of those teams, which is sad, because like you, I've got a soft spot for Portsmouth. I was hoping they would get a positive result at the Stadium of Light. I think they'll probably go out in the second leg. I don't think they'll even make the final, which would be a shame.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Thursday night. I'm doing Drive for 2 weeks now on Talk Sport, so I'm not going to get to the second leg, but I am going to do the League One playoff final, and I really hope that Portsmouth are there, so big fingers crossed for that. I hope they have the opportunity to go back into the Championship, although Kenny, I think, privately has said he thinks that they are a little bit tired, which is a bit of a worry. Going into the final furlong. I was at Leeds Derby, or Derby Leeds, on Saturday night. Spoke to Frank Lampard after the game. Wasn't happy about his team and the way they played in that match. He thought they needed to use the ball a little bit better, and I think they certainly were almost devoid of using the ball, because Leeds dominated so much of the possession and actually didn't create as many chances as they have done in previous matches, but still come away with a 1-0 victory. There's always controversy when those two play each other. We know about Spygate. It's a bit boring now. But the headbutt from Matthias Klick, why? What was the point of doing that? It was very Marco Materazzi, Zinedine Zidane, World Cup final 2006. It's just unnecessary. It was just a stupid thing to do. And I don't know if he can be retrospectively banned, because he was given a yellow card for it. So, you know, he might have got away with that as a result. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens there as well. I don't fancy Derby in that. I fancy Villa to go up in the playoffs. I fancy Charlton to go up in the playoffs. I haven't seen much of the League Two action, so I'm not going to commit to that. But I'd be putting my money on a Charlton and Aston Villa double, the way things are at the moment.
I'd agree. And Premier League's going to be interesting next season, because I think if Villa go up, they'll be strong. Not sure Sheffield United will have enough. Norwich probably haven't got the financial muscle. I fear for Brighton. We've spoken about that already. But Do we see already it's going to be a two-horse race between Liverpool and Manchester City again? Or does that depend what Spurs do in the summer? Because
I think
Manchester United are a shambles.
So much depends on what happens at Spurs this summer. I am convinced, and I wrote Stuart Pearce a note today during part of the game. I can't remember why I did it like that, but I wrote him a note and I just went, Poch, Christmas, Manchester United. And that is the only prediction I'm going to give you for next season.
Can he come in now? Can we just scrap the Christmas bit? Say, thank you, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. For 10 weeks, you turned the tide, you brought the feel-good factor back. But actually, you're as hopeless as you were at Cardiff.
Tweet of the day today, by the way, goes to the guy who tweeted out, it's only taken 5 years, but finally Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has got Cardiff playing well.
could they sack him? I mean, do you think that's a possibility? Could they realise they've made, to quote me earlier, a catastrophic error here?
I think that they won't. Because it would be another admission of failure by the chief executive. I think that they've done it the complete wrong way around. They've got a manager in, they've decided to stick with, that he's going to be the centrepiece of their new structure, and they're getting advice from him as to who should be the technical director, when it should be the technical director appointing the manager. So I think that's all a bit strange and a bit backwards, but I do think there's so many problems there that I don't think it starts and ends with the manager. I think there's so many issues there. I mean, the idea of Pogba and Alexis Sanchez falling out and having a massive sort of like strop over who's got the biggest goal bonus. Guys,
well, it doesn't matter, because neither of them are scoring or assisting.
Goals.
It doesn't matter. Oh, wait, this should be a whole new podcast.
Just don't do any more on Manchester United.
Let me put you on the spot about the league in general. So, who do you think from this season will be the most improved team of next? And we can come back to this, can't we, in a year's time?
Well, I tell you what, there's a lot of teams that are going to improve over the summer, because they'll have to. I mean, Tottenham have got to improve. Any team that loses 13 games and finishes in the top four, I mean, they will improve next season. Tottenham, doesn't matter, because they're not going to lose 13 games next year. But they've got to strengthen, because if they don't, they're going to get caught by someone. I'll tell you who I think is going to be very good next season. Leicester City.
I actually agree with you on that. I thought they beat Chelsea today.
That's annoyed you, actually, isn't it? It's annoyed you that we've both picked the same sort of team. You were going. Yeah. You thought you were going to have the sort of the exclusive rights to that, but it didn't work out.
I was going to put Southampton up as well, but I still think they've got a lot of issues to resolve. God. I mean, they've got
so
many
Ralph
players
going out for a beer.
Yeah, I'd like that. He's gone off on holiday, by the way, but he's teetotal, so that wouldn't work.
Okay.
But I think they will improve Southampton, but they've got a lot of players they need to move on first. But yeah, Leicester's an interesting one. I think Brendan Rodgers is the perfect appointment at the right time. They've got a lot of good young players. I think they need to keep Tielemans, who's an excellent player. I think they need an option as opposed to Vardy, and it wouldn't surprise me if they actively pursue Callum Wilson at Bournemouth. I think that would be the perfect move for him. I'm not sure. You know I love Callum Wilson. I'm not sure Chelsea would be the right move. I think Leicester could be the perfect fit, and for me, they could be the team pushing for that best of the rest tag next season.
Well, Chelsea can't sign anyone, so they ain't going to sign him anyway, because their ban is and now active, and they can't sign anyone. They can't. They appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, but that's not going to sit till November, so they're now trying to ask them to freeze the ban in the interim period. That didn't happen to Atletico Madrid, so I don't know if that will happen anyway. But anyway, listen, look, we've ranted on. It's just me and you today because Michelle, again, is not very well. We do wish her all the best. I've got to say, I've really enjoyed doing the podcast over the course of the season. We are going to come back over the summer and do some specials with some guys that work in different sports, and we'll be back full time at the start of the campaign. But I've really enjoyed the podcast. I've enjoyed the banter between the two of us, and the fact that we've got to spend so much time together over the course of the.
We need a break, then, don't we? We need a summer break.
You need a break from me. You sent me a text earlier on saying, "Why are we even friends?" Listen, I've got to go because I want to get involved in this Manchester City party. As you can see, it's starting to hot up here, and I want to get involved in it.
Sad to say, we've come to the end of the podcast for today and this season. Thank you to all our guests who have come on over the course of this campaign, everyone who's listened, and thank you, Crook and Sam. I've not been on the podcast much in the last couple of weeks due to being ill, but you guys have done a sterling job.
It's all over, I think. No.
Subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all major podcast platforms. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.